Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning, Counsel.
This is Andrew Jacobs for the petitioner Leonardo Tapia Felix, and may it please the court. We appeal because there is no proof here in this record by clear and convincing evidence. That's clear in the second appeal from the same district court, and that should result in this court possessing a definite and firm conviction that an error has been committed in this case requiring reversal. The government in this case bore the burden of clear and convincing demonstration and purposed its entire case's reliance on Agent Wakefield. He was their only friendly witness. The district court properly, after he had misled the district court essentially, didn't rely on his testimony at all. That was the case the government tried. Their entire closing argument in writing is Agent Wakefield. The district court rejected Agent Wakefield, and on the other side of it, there's just a ton of evidence that arrays and is very well cross-correlated and supports each other piece of evidence by that correlation. There's the fact of the U.S. baptism, which is an evidentially significant fact this court remanded for consideration of. There's the California delayed registration of birth. There's the daughter's grant of derivative citizenship, which under Mondaca Vega is substantial credible evidence of citizenship. There's the mother's testimony of California live birth. There's the aunt's testimony she witnessed the California live birth.
Counsel, in reviewing this evidence, to the extent that there were adverse credibility findings made, that is squarely within the province of the district court. So it's not de novo review. I think to the extent that the district court made credibility findings, I don't know that sitting here as appellate judges, we can do too much with that. So keep those arguments in mind when you're trying to overturn this judgment. Let's focus on standard review in making your argument. So what is your best argument that this case should be sent back for redo?
I think this court should reverse the case as opposed to sending it back, Your Honor. But the best argument for sending it back is the court didn't give real weight to the California delayed registration of birth because it ignored this court's mandate to consider the U.S. baptism. The court also did not give weight to Gretchen Kuhner's expert testimony about transnational families. The court said that Kuhner's testimony was irrelevant, which contradicts this court's remand order to begin with, and it was irrelevant because she didn't interview people. But that had nothing to do with the premise of the testimony. The testimony was about the prevalence of the practice of dual national registration of American-born children in transnational Mexican-American families. That testimony was simply disregarded. It was disregarded twice now. And so that testimony indicates that it's very significantly statistically likely that in a dual national family such as this, that the registration of the birth in Mexico is in fact not evidence, is not evidence that the child was born in Mexico.
When you say it was disregarded, didn't Judge Logan in fact write in his order that in fact he considered it, and didn't he actually offer some commentary as to why he thought that it wasn't applicable? Now, isn't there a difference between whether or not he's considered it and made a determination about its relevance versus simply not considering it at all? Because you've argued he didn't consider it at all, but he actually says in his opinion that he actually does consider it, doesn't he?
Judge Bulwer, you're correct. He says that he considered it, but he does not give any effect to, he doesn't say, I have considered the fact that half of these transnational families, in fact, have this dual registration. He considered it to be, quote, logically irrelevant. And I would say the concept of logical irrelevance is sort of a barrier to the consideration and assigning weight to the fact. This court in its prior remand order, after we visited on this 2 years ago, said it was relevant. The question is weighing it. And so he decided on remand that he considered it, as you say, Judge Bulwer, in his text, but his consideration consisted of saying it was logically irrelevant, which gives it no weight, and also consisted separately of saying that it was irrelevant because she didn't interview anybody, which is really such a stark failure to grapple with what the evidence is as to basically reject it.
So are you saying this is a violation of the rule of mandate, or it is clear error as it relates to the factual finding of the weight of that particular evidence?
It's both. The district court didn't do what it was told to do, and then in not doing what it was told to do, it therefore committed clear error because it failed to give any weight to a fact which this court already determined it needed to assign weight to, and which, if given weight, would necessarily lead one to the conclusion that the record is at best equivocal, and the record could not be clear and convincing, that is almost beyond a reasonable doubt, that the government proved Mexican birth, where half of the families in this circumstance And again, the government didn't really rebut this witness. The government did not put in a witness against this fact. The government chose to develop the case this way, Judge Boulware, and that's the record. It's not the record in any of these cases, but that's the way the record lay in this case. Likewise, the fact of the baptism is especially troubling. And again, it is both a violation of the mandate rule and, to the point of Your Honor's questions, clear error. The baptism analysis doesn't change from the 2017 to the 2019 order. And that is literally, Judge Boulware, to the point of your question, which I really take your point. It is a literal refusal to consider, because in both of these orders, the district court is saying that it's troubled by a 2002 record that the government introduced. And that's the district court's literal refusal to grapple with a 1990 California registration of birth, which is founded on pre-1990 records. That is a literal refusal to consider the fact of baptism. And we already know that in the first go-round, the district court decided not to honor the U.S. government's own stipulation of the 1972 baptism. And it continues to pick and pick and pick at this 2002 baptismal document, which, again, to be crystal clear, the government introduced. That is truly irrelevant. And it is no fair basis on which to assail the position of petitioner. And so back to the point again of Judge Nguyen's question, I take your point, Judge Nguyen, that there are a mixture of facts that are inarguable here that were remanded for consideration and some facts that are subject to a credibility determination. But I would submit that the district court cannot credibility determine its way to the government carrying a burden where all it has in its hand is a Mexican birth certificate. And that's really all it has. And I would also say that in terms of the analytic weighing that was to be done, it's one thing to say that on the scales of justice, you have a rock here and you have a rock here. The Mexican birth certificate is particularly subject to the testimony and the impugnment of the testimony of Gretchen Kuhner, because Gretchen Kuhner offers not simply a rock that is analogous. Gretchen Kuhner's testimony is an extrinsic critique of what the Mexican birth certificate is. It's not just saying it's true, it's not true. It's saying, yeah, there is a Mexican birth certificate, and 47% of the time in 550,000 transnational families, that wouldn't be logically relevant to finding that the child was born in Mexico. So it's a very powerful fact. It's one the district court chose not to grapple with. And the district court here really did, I think, walk to some degree, even in Sinanang Smith territory. It went against the principle of party presentation of the case. The entire U.S. government case was Agent Wakefield. The court rejected Agent Wakefield. It was untroubled by that. It stepped over. It rejected a stipulation. This court reversed the rejection of that stipulation. And the court, even after that mandate, the district court continues to spend significant analytic weight, with some support in its brief from the United States government, attacking the 2002 baptismal record that has no relevance to anything that was 12 years after the California delayed registration of birth. That is violating the principle of party presentation. It's not fair. And it does nothing here to avoid the clear inference of clear error. I'd like to reserve my last 2 minutes if I could, please, Your Honors.
Yes, but let me ask you one question before you do that. Because the core of your argument is that we presented all of this evidence and the scope of the remand basically required the court to accept the stipulation. So the court was too critical of the baptism certificate. But it seems to me in reading the district court's order that was not the only evidence that the district court relied on. The district court said that, look, the baptism certificate does provide some corroboration that the petitioner spent time in both Mexico and the United States, but it really doesn't overcome the government's evidence, which the court found to be convincing, which includes the Mexican birth certificate. There is a Mexican registration card, documents from the A file, and the citizenship packet of his daughter. So how do you address all of those other pieces of evidence that the district court put together in weighing which side has met their burden?
Okay, Judge Nguyen, I think there's about three parts in that question. First of all, yes, the district court says it shows that he spent time in both countries, but the district court did not address and did not cite any of the three cases that create a direct inference that because there's a baptismal certificate, there was birth in the nation of the baptism. That was argued. The court sidestepped that for number one. Number two, it violates the mandate rule because the additional pieces of evidence Your Honor just pointed out, Judge Nguyen, are all pieces of evidence that were so clear and convincing in carrying the government's burden that the district court assigned them literally no weight the first time around and said, my case is the Mexican birth certificate. So I think that gives a strong suggestion both that they aren't clear and convincing proof of anything And second of all, that they violate the mandate rule. And third of all, what you have here is the government has to prove by clear and convincing. And if the record is at least equivocal and there's at least equipoise, Rose versus Sessions, they don't cite it, they don't acknowledge it, the court ignored it. If the evidence is at least in equipoise and the remanded matters alone, even assuming that Judge Logan correctly determined that every single other piece of corroborative evidence all was entitled to no credibility, the matters that Your Honors remanded in the first proceeding already should suffice to get you at least to equipoise. So those would be our three responses, Judge Nguyen.
All right, thank you. My question ate up your rebuttal time, so I'll put 2 minutes on the clock when you come back. Thank you. Mr. Ross.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court, Jonathan Ross for the United States. If Mr. Tapia was born in the United States, he's a United States citizen. If he was not born in the United States, he's not. Here, Mr. Tapia has a heavy burden to show clear error, to identify issues that would leave this court to have a definite and firm conviction that a mistake has been committed. Instead, he points to repeated arguments that this court's already rejected. The testimony of Agent Wakefield, the mandate rule for the first time now.
So Mr. Ross, let me ask this question. Why doesn't the expert testimony of Ms. Cooner directly rebut the reliability of the Mexican birth registration? You have over 200,000 families who ostensibly did exactly what's alleged by Mr. Tapia here, right? Why does that not substantially undermine the government's case and create an issue about the government having met its burden by clear and convincing evidence?
Your Honor, that the characterization of Ms. Cooner's testimony is not entirely accurate, and I know that it's the interpretation that my colleague puts forward. However, here, the trial court expressly admitted Ms. Cooner's testimony, it considered it, and it applied her research to the facts of this case. Her research was specifically as to foreign national parents that give birth to their children in the United States, have that child registered in the United States, and then return to Mexico to have that child re-registered with the hopes of giving them dual citizenship. And that's not what happened here in Mr. Tapia's case. However, to your inquiry, even if that's what happened here, and even if her testimony involved transnational families in their registration patterns, Ms. Cooner identified a trend, but not even a majority trend. Moreover, her testimony was merely one piece of evidence weighed against powerful and concrete evidence of the Mexican birth, of the Mexican registration card, of the sworn statement that he made in his daughter's citizenship application that he was a Mexican national, and his immigration encounters with United States immigration.
Right, but Judge Logan appears to rely primarily on the Mexican birth certificate. I mean, he spends pages, actually, right, on that. And so the real question that Mr. Tapia is raising, which I think we have to grapple with, is the expert testimony. And is it your position that the expert testimony doesn't raise any issues of credibility for the Mexican registration? Or is that even if it does, these other documents bolster whatever doubt there might be about that registration, or both?
Both points, Your Honor. As I indicated previously, the Mexican birth certificate is uncontested in the record as to admissibility and accuracy. Further, as the trial court determined, that paired with the weight of the other evidence of Mexican birth, not just the birth certificate, offset and established that what Ms. Cooner was testifying about didn't even apply here. And even if you were to apply Ms. Cooner's testimony to the facts of Mr. Tapia's case and allowing for this interpretation that it just referred to registrations and re-registrations in general, what you have is not a contemporaneous case like Ms. Cooner discussed, where a child was born in country A, registered there, then brought to country B and registered there almost contemporaneously. Here you have an 18-year difference of registration that only comes up after Mr. Tapia had an encounter with immigration and was no longer to freely cross the border at his will. Therefore, turning back to this trial court, to this court's original mandate, it asked the trial court to reevaluate two isolated issues. And the trial court did comply with both of those. Whereas it previously did refuse to admit Ms. Cooner's testimony, it did admit it, and it gave it full consideration. Similarly, with the stipulation as to Mr. Tibia's baptism in the United States, that was also registered as well. And as this court has recognized, the burden is on Mr. Tapia now to show that there's clear error with that determination, where the trial complied with the exact mandate of this court.
I'm sorry for jumping in and interrupting you, counsel, but you were talking about the mandate and the fact that we had remanded it the last time for the district court to accept the party's fact stipulation. And that's a pretty critical stipulation for the petitioner's case, which demonstrates that he was in the United States, baptized in the United States on the year of his birth. And so the court said that I'm accepting the party's stipulation to the fact of petitioner's baptism, and that's at ER 12. But yet on ER 13, the district court concluded, absent the record of baptism, there is no other persuasive evidence of record that shows petitioner was present in the United States in 1972. So that's completely counter to the factual stipulation that the district court accepted. Why isn't that alone sufficient to warrant a remand in this case? The district court said it accepted the factual stipulation, but in its penultimate sentence, it says there's no evidence here that he was in the United States in 1972, the year of his birth. That's completely inaccurate if the court really, in fact, accepted the stipulations. How do you respond to that?
The court absolutely did accept the stipulation, Judge Wynn, and there's a very logical interpretation as to what the court was meaning. And any error that is present would be absolutely harmless, because whereas Mr. Tapia was born in June 1972 and his birth was registered in Mexico shortly thereafter, in December 1972, 6 months later, approximately 6 months later, that is the point in which he was baptized in the United States. The date and the location of baptism was the only part of the party stipulations. So perhaps where the court was talking about that there was no evidence of his birth, it's very apparent to the government that he was born in Mexico, immediately south of the United States border in Colorado, Mexico. And then 6 months later, his baptism was registered in Los Angeles.
If the district court had said, look, I've considered the stipulation, I've considered the totality of the record, all the expert testimony, fact testimony, and so forth, and I find that the evidence is convincing he was born in Mexico, 6 months later, he was baptized in Los Angeles. But that wasn't the court's reasoning. It said there's no evidence, no other persuasive evidence of record that shows he was present in the United States in 1972. So I don't know if the district court is accepting the argument that you're raising now, which is that he was born in Mexico. 6 months later, they must have brought him here for baptism. I don't know if the court accepted that, and that's what the court was thinking, or if the district court just got it wrong, that there's no evidence he was present in the U.S. in 1972. Did the Your government Honor, argue that below, that he was born in Mexico and 6 months later was brought to the U.S. to be baptized?
Your Honor, the court accepted the party's stipulation, and that stipulation was that he was born in, that he was baptized in Los Angeles in December at the very end of 1972. Again,
sure. So you're saying that the court drew those inferences, and therefore we should do the same, given that the court accepted that his birth was in Mexico. My question is, was that argued before the district court, that the government's theory, given the factual stipulation, is that he was born in Mexico and then 6 months later brought to the U.S. for a baptism? Did the government specifically argue that?
Your Honor, I want to get to the heart of your question, and it requires more than just a simple yes or no. However, what the stipulation is a dot on a timeline. And ultimately, like I said at the inception of my argument, this is a question of whether Mr. Tapia was born in the United States or not. where he was subsequently brought afterwards is not an issue, nor is his physical presence.
No, I understand that. But let's get an answer to my question first, because I want to know what the district court heard, what he was thinking of. You're relying on an inference here, because there's a factual misstatement in the district court's ruling, and so it helps me to see the context of the party's argument. So I take it by your answer that specific argument wasn't made. I understand the whole, dot on the timeline issue.
That's correct. And, to your point, it doesn't require this court to make an inference, because the underlying question, the essential question here is, was Mr. Tabea born in the United States? And the overwhelming weight of evidence, as determined by the trial court, both times found that the evidence of his Mexican birth outweighed the other evidence, expressly the evidence that this court directed the trial court to look at on remand. And if I may have just a few additional seconds to close, I would greatly appreciate
the
court's indulgence. Thank you.
Yes.
Clear error is a demanding standard, highly deferential to the trial court. The trial court did not err where it accomplished the two requested tasks on remand. It accepted the stipulation of the parties. It admitted, considered, and applied the evidence of Ms. Cooner. And now, because Mr. Tapia failed to carry his burden to show clear error, the court should deny the petition for review. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Just put 2 minutes on the clock. I think you're on mute, counsel.
Thank you, Judge Nguyen. You're right. Further to the point of your question, it wasn't simply the sentence that you excerpted to counsel a moment ago that shows the district court direct refusal to accept the stipulation. Why spend so much time and energy beating up on the 2002, 12 years later, document about baptism that the government introduced if you're not questioning the veracity of the baptismal stipulation? The whole point is to undermine the baptismal stipulation and to accord it less weight. The court attacked it that way. The court attacked it in the way the question that Your Honor posed indicated. But there was something really breathtaking in counsel's argument that I really want to pause on, which is we are told now for the first time in this 10 years of refashionings of theories by the United States government that Mr. Tapia Felix was carried across the border 6 months after birth. If you look at the record of the trial of this case, Agent Wakefield's improperly coerced affidavit from Leonardo's illiterate mother actually says he crossed the border 39 days after birth. So if he crossed the border 39 days after birth, I guess that would place him in the country 4.5 months, if born in Mexico, before the Los Angeles baptism. So I would think the government, to be consistent, having tried an entire case premised on the idea of a 39-day aged border crossing for purpose of squaring nationalization, would then say the district court not only was improperly questioning the stipulation, but was factually wrong because, contrary to the argument just made, Mr. Tapia, by extension, would have been in the country for 4 months before the baptism. So the government here is just endlessly refashioning its theories. And the district court, I would really submit to all of your honors, to the point of Judge Boulware's prior question, it's one thing to say, I dealt with it. But when the logic of what you express gives literally no credit to the thing that you claim to deal with, I would respectfully urge this court to reach the more difficult conclusion that the district court did literally fail to grapple with those matters where the logic was accorded no weight, where Ms. Kuhner's testimony was attacked solely on the basis that she didn't interview people. That's not really weighing the rocks in a fair way. That's saying a rock isn't a rock. So we'd respectfully ask that you reverse.
All right. Judge Boulware, did you have a question?
I did have one question, which is, Mr. Jacobs, is Judge Logan not permitted, even though he may not have mentioned documents previously, to actually consider the other documents, the card, the A file, and the other documents, and reemphasize those pursuant to this court's directive for him to reevaluate some of the testimony?
I would say the way it played out in this case, Judge Boulware, let me explain why I'd actually say the answer, notwithstanding the framing of that question, would be no. The judge wrote a very carefully reasoned, carefully written 15-page order with tons of cases and tons of facts. And at the first time, when he as the U.S. District Judge dealt with this matter very seriously and very gravely, very grave matter. And when he did so, he did not accord those matters weight. I think we have to take seriously that Judge Logan in 2017 did not accord the matters upon which the government would now found Mexican birth weight. And so when this court says, we want you to just do what you did, but do these two other things, I don't think this court was saying in the mandate rule sense, go back and re-decide everything from scratch. And that's what the government's position is. And that's latent in the line of reasoning the government proposes. And if that were true, Judge Boulware, that the court could do that, the court could just as easily exhume the destroyed testimony of Agent Wakefield, which frankly, if we go back for a third time, I'm going to have to brief how Agent Wakefield's testimony squares with the argument counsel just made. And so we're sort of endlessly going around and around. I think this court limited on remand and said, it's what you did, Judge Logan, plus two things. And anything else defeats the spirit of the mandate, and we cited cases to that effect. So we think respectfully to the district court, Judge Boulware, that he was not allowed to do that.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel, to both sides for your argument in this case. The matter is submitted.